Next case of the day is State versus Williamson. Is it Mr. Dungan?
Yes, sir.
Morning to you and Mr. Liss. Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? And Mr. Dungan, you may approach and you may proceed.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is George Dungan. I'm from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant Joshua Williamson. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of rebuttal time, if I may. Your Honors, the case before the court today assigns two errors, both of which are related to the costs that are assessed to a defendant as a part of sentencing. The first issue pertains to what fees of extradition can be taxed to a defendant as a cost, and the second issue pertains to the procedure that must be followed in order to assess costs to a defendant in general. I think it would be helpful to address the matters in that order, so that's the way that I'm going to talk about them today. First of all, we're asking the court to find that the district court erred in assigning the costs of prosecution to the appellant outside of what is authorized by Nebraska Revised Statute 29752. In this case, the fees of extradition totaled $2,533.04.
What evidence of that is in the record?
Your Honors, I understand that was also addressed in the state's brief, and that's something that I absolutely wanted to address today. In the hearing that was conducted for sentencing, the parties agreed in their comments that those were the total cost, the $2,500.33.
And I want to be clear about that. When you say the parties agreed, are you claiming that there was a stipulation where one party said this is a fact and the other party said I stipulate to that fact?
Judge, I don't believe, or Your Honor, I don't believe it qualifies as a stipulation. We would argue in this circumstance, it's more of a judicial admission. I think that it's clear in cases such as State v. Kennedy that a judicial admission is a formal act that's done in the course of a judicial proceeding and that it may substitute for evidence by conceding for the purpose of litigation that the proposition of fact alleged by an opponent is true. So in the hearing that was conducted at sentencing, there was not sworn evidence, certainly. However, statements were made by myself on behalf of Mr. Williamson representing specific amounts of the costs, or rather fees of the extradition.
But and your own statements would not be evidence. And they could not be a judicial admission because it would not run against the interests of your client. So you're relying solely upon what the state's lawyer said at the hearing. Is that right?
I believe so. Yes, Your Honor. The statements were made by myself, and then it is a judicial admission on behalf of the state when the county attorney at that sentencing said, and this is in the Bill of Exceptions, something to the effect of, we don't disagree with anything Mr. Dungan said. We don't disagree that those are the costs and that that's where they came from. And so the rundown of the fees that were provided.
Is that unequivocal?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I believe that in the hearing, the amounts of those fees for the extradition were given specifically, at which point in time the state said, we don't disagree with any of that, and they agree.
Let's assume for just a moment, for the purposes of my question,
certainly,
that we disagree, that there's no judicial admission, therefore there's no evidence. Then we're back under the precedent of the case that I wrote at the Court of Appeals years ago, right?
Is that State v. Smith, Your Honor?
Yes.
Yes.
But assuming for purposes of argument that there was a judicial admission, where does that take us?
If there was a judicial admission, Judge, we're asking the court to apply the law that was determined in State v. Smith to this case. And so essentially what we have here are court costs, extradition fees on one hand that are agreed upon by all parties if we assume that there is a judicial admission. We know for a fact that State v. Smith stands for the proposition that the extradition fees that can be taxed to a defendant as part of costs are fixed at mileage. That's what State v. Smith, Smith says in the holding, obviously.
In this situation, I believe in the record, the only place there is a set breakdown of the extradition costs was the statements you made. And in those statements, did you set forth the miles traveled and applicable mileage rate?
I did set forth the miles traveled. Those were 1,250 miles. I don't believe in the Bill of Exceptions there is a recitation of the applicable mileage rate at that point in time. It's for that reason that what we're asking for here today is that this case be remanded to the district court with instructions to properly determine what the fees of the extradition can be under 29752. And so I think what differentiates this from State v. Smith is that we did specifically get into the amount of miles that were driven to retrieve Mr. Williamson from North Dakota. That's a fact that was not included in State v. Smith.
But could the court do this on the existing record? If we send it back, could the court make that determination on the record that exists right now?
No, Your Honor, I believe that in order to determine the specific amount of the, I'm sorry, the specific mileage rate that was applicable, a hearing would have to be held. And I think that, hence a remand with instructions to hold a hearing to determine those amounts would be appropriate. What we do know here is that there are specific fees of extradition that include lodging, food, and specifically the salary of the officers who went to retrieve Mr. Williamson from North Dakota, none of which are covered under 29752. That is a fact that is undisputed by either party. And again, we argue that is a judicial admission that the state made saying we do not dispute that. The actual amount of the fees of extradition, I understand, are somewhat ambiguous at this point in time, given the fact that that mileage rate simply on the record is not there, but it is undisputed between either of the parties, and I don't believe the state in their brief ever disputes this either, that there were in fact fees of the extradition that were taxed to Mr. Williamson outside of the statutory provisions under 29752. And it's, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. I was just breathing and I didn't mean to interrupt.
Very attentive, I apologize. And it's for that reason that we also believe this differs from State v. Smith in the standard review that was used. In State v. Smith, it's an abuse of discretion case. I know the language in State v. Kula, as referenced by the state in their brief, specifically talks about abuse of discretion being the proper standard of review to determine the appropriateness of costs. What differentiates this from State v. Smith and from that language in Kula is I believe that language about abuse of discretion is pertaining to either an excessive sentence, if that's what's being argued, which we're not arguing here, or the determination of the appropriateness of costs that are statutory allowed.
Now I have a question. As far as the laundry list of statutorily allowed costs of the prosecution, where do I go to find the laundry list? And then who keeps it? Is it the clerk's office? Is somebody sitting there keeping the costs in justice the way they do in a civil case? Walk me through the nuts and bolts of that.
Well, and this... The district court clerk is the one that has sort of the total running of the costs.
What's the laundry list?
In terms of what can be taxed
Correct.
As a cost. My review of the statutes doesn't actually specifically lay that out. There is under 29-2206-1A that talks about what costs can be assessed, and it says that it can include the fees of extradition pursuant to the determination of 29752. But I believe it is somewhat ambiguous in the statutes and in the case law what technically counts as a cost of prosecution.
So how do the clerks know what to tag in justice if it's not even clear, if it's not identified somewhere in the statute and we've not articulated it in the case law?
I think there is specific common practice. Costs of prosecution normally include a certain filing fees. There's witness fees that go into that. And those are costs that fall under, I believe, that the general cost of the prosecution that are undisputed. What differentiates the extradition fees from those costs is that the extradition fees are specifically enumerated in 29752. With regards to the limitations that we can tax as an extradition fee. And so again, I think the abuse of discretion standard goes towards the general court costs that individuals may believe are generally a part of the prosecution. Again, filing fees, witness fees, those normal costs that are necessary to effectuate the prosecution or the course of the prosecution. But if we're getting into specific fees such as extradition, that is statutorily defined. And it is clear again in this case that the amount of the fees that were taxed to Mr. Williamson were outside of the statutory provisions of 29752. Again, undisputed by either party due to that judicial admission by the state.
So to know exactly what it is that you claim the state judicially admitted, what we have to do is look to the language of what you actually said to the court during that hearing, right?
Correct. I believe the judicial admission on behalf of the state is an admission that the fees and the allocution of those fees and the mileage that were laid out in the sentencing argument were correct.
If there is some ambiguity in what you said, charge the ambiguity against.
I think that given that it is a can you clarify an ambiguity?
I haven't looked at the Bill of Exceptions. I'm a little troubled that just saying 1,000 whatever miles without explicitly going on to say you've traveled by the officer for the purpose of going to retrieving and returning the defendant to the location. In other words, if what you said is complete is one thing. If it's sort of verbal shorthand, that may be something else. Is there verbal shorthand in there?
I don't remember exactly what I said. I can just to clarify in the argument, and I see that I'm out of time. May I answer the question?
You may.
In the Bill of Exceptions and in the comments that were made at sentencing, there was no sworn evidence that was given. However, I did quote the sheriff's office, whom I called, and that is clear in the Bill of Exceptions that I called the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office, who are the ones that went to retrieve Mr. Williamson from Minot, North Dakota. In that, I presented the numbers that were given to me from the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office. It was at that time that I laid out those exact numbers that were provided to me by them, and the state agreed to that. Again, my concern would be that—
Let me ask you this. Did you talk to the state before this hearing and say, look, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm setting up an issue for you. Will you agree to this?
I believe there was some conversation between myself and the county attorney, if I remember correctly. And again, this is a while ago, and I have a number of cases. I believe the county attorney who covered sentencing for this matter was not the county attorney assigned to the case. I don't recall exactly if that's accurate or not, but I know it's sentencing. Sometimes if one is busy, another one takes over. My review of the file indicates that the county attorney who covered sentencing was not the one that was written on my file. I don't recall exactly whom I had a conversation with, but I do know that the costs of extradition were discussed prior to the sentencing, specifically as evidenced by the transcript, which shows this back and forth discussion about the money being released back to Mr. Williamson, given that he'd surrendered on his bond. And so I know the conversation about the amount of extradition costs had been raised. I'm unaware as to whether or not we sought out an agreement from the state. But again, the state agreed with us that those numbers were not in dispute. They simply believed they should be taxed as extradition fees. And given the limitations of 29752, I believe that oversteps the statutory guidelines of what can be an extradition fee.
Yeah. So isn't it the practice when there's a writ of extradition that there would be a sheriff's return that shows what the expenses were incurred on that? Isn't that something that normally would appear in the court file of the trial court? And assuming that that's the case, we don't have that in our record here, do we?
I reviewed, prior to coming in today, I reviewed the judge's notes and the transcript, and I didn't see that actual sum that was in there. I'm not sure why that's not included in the transcript, but again, I can assure you that the total amount of the fees of extradition that were laid out at the sentencing hearing by myself, again, were agreed to by the state. And so I don't believe that number is in dispute.
The sheriff's return is not in our record.
Correct, Your Honor, not by my review of the record.
Chief, one more question and it's short.
Certainly.
Is any of this addressed in the pre-sentence investigation?
The pre-sentence investigation in its entirety, I do believe does discuss the return of Mr. Williamson back from Minot, North Dakota. I do not believe that there is a specific finding of how much that cost in there, but I do know that I believe looking at the pre-sentence investigation could be informative, specifically in looking at sort of the process and procedure by which he was retrieved from Minot, North Dakota. Thank you.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Chief Justice. May I ask a question?
Certainly.
I guess the question would be, is there a dispute about the mileage between Lancaster County / Lincoln and Minot? Is this something of which a court could take judicial notice?
I believe the court could. Again, there was no dispute about that mileage. This was not, you know, a party at sentencing saying, I went on Google Maps and I determined it was this much. This was the amount recited to myself by the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office treasurer secretary whom I spoke to. And again, the state agreed to that amount. And so the record, I believe, is clear that there is no dispute about the 1,250 miles that were driven. Whether that's an accurate telling, I'm not sure. But that is certainly the amount that I believe was taxed or counted as mileage for the fees that were ultimately taxed to Mr. Williamson as an extradition cost.
Not to be difficult, but your brief says 1,260 miles.
I'm sorry. That's what's in the
brief. I'm not sure what ambiguity there is.
Whatever is in the brief and whatever is contained in the bill of exceptions is the accurate number. I'm going off my notes that were written. And if I misspoke, I apologize. But what is in the brief and what's in the bill of exceptions is the amount that was recited to me by the sheriff's office.
As the defendant completely says, in this case,
he is still in the Department of Correctional Services.
On this sentence?
I believe so.
So he has not set out these costs at this point.
Correct. I can tell the court, and again, we might be going outside the record here, that if you pull this case up on justice right now, he has to owe these. These costs are still on there as owed. In addition, the fees of extradition, in addition to the regular court costs. So those are still owed by Mr. Williamson at this time. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Right. Police and Court, Nathan Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. Williamson raises two claims on appeal. We maintain that he's not entitled to relief on either claim. As far as the first claim regarding the district court's imposition of extradition costs, we maintain that Williamson has failed to show any error on this issue because there's no evidence that the district court actually imposed extradition costs in this case. The district court ordered Williamson to pay court costs and the cost of prosecution, but it made no further findings on that during its oral pronouncement of sentence or in its written execution of sentence.
How do we know what costs of prosecution are under Nebraska law? Give me the laundry list and tell me where I find it.
I don't know what the laundry list is, and if there is one, I don't know where to find it. I've looked at all these statutes, and I'm not sure that there is one. 29-2207 says that upon someone being found guilty, the court shall enter a judgment for costs of prosecution against the defendant, but I see no further elaboration in our statutes, and I don't think our case law lays it out all that clearly either, not to fault the courts, because I don't think the question's really been before the court that I've found in any particular case. But
the only issue raised in this case is the extradition cost, though, correct?
The
court costs are not an issue.
Right. Well, at least what that can entail, that question's not before you. The second and separate question is whether the district court failed to consider his ability to pay.
The state's not taking the position, contrary to the State versus Smith case, I think it was, that extradition costs beyond mileage are applicable to the defendant, are they?
No, we're not taking the position. We take no issue with State v. Smith. I think that's consistent with what the statute says, that mileage would be the only extradition cost that can be taxed to a defendant. But in this case, based on my review of the record, there's no evidence that the district court imposed any extradition costs.
When a district court taxes costs, does it have the obligation to state the amount?
I think it may. Well, a district court can do three things. It can deduct costs from the bond. It can require costs to be paid in a one lump sum or in installment payments. If you're going to do a lump sum or installment payments, I would think you have to state the amount or else that doesn't work.
Is it plain error for a trial court to simply say 10 days and costs of prosecution without specifying what the costs are?
If you're deducting it from the bond, I'm not sure that's plain error, because I don't think the statutes specifically require the court to articulate that, at least if the costs are being deducted from the bond.
How would the clerk know what amount to deduct?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, and I've been trying to figure it out myself. My understanding, just from looking at justice in this case and any other case, is that these behind the scenes, the clerk of the court is tabulating all of the costs and keeping track of all of that, and then that gets forwarded on to the county clerk.
On the civil side, we've said that costs are part of the judgment, and judgment requires the court to determine what the amount of the judgment is. If it just says, like, give you judgment without specifying an amount, that would be an unenforceable, ambiguous judgment. Shouldn't the same rule apply on the criminal side when you're talking about the amount of costs?
And routinely, even like in a traffic case, don't courts impose specific costs every day, all the time?
They do. Yeah, I mean, from the state's perspective, we wouldn't have a problem with that. I'm not really here to take issue with that premise.
It's a standard practice throughout the state, though, isn't it, that costs are not determined by the court when they're imposed at this point. The practice is costs in general are imposed, and then amount is determined later normally by the clerk. Would you agree with that, about what you've seen in the past?
I don't know. I mean, this issue rarely comes up, and frankly, I'm never involved with this, so I don't really know that I'm in a position to say what the common practice is. I mean, I assume that some costs are going to be calculated after the fact, because some of them haven't taken place yet. I mean, you're still adding up costs as you go through each proceeding. So that would make some sense as well. And it obviously would be, at times, I think, pretty burdensome for a district court to go through all of this and have to announce this as part of its judgment, and to have that information before it. And,
well, when you do a jury trial, the cost of the jurors is taxed to the defendant. That would include mileage, which you may not know until after you've accepted the verdict, potentially even the judgment, even sentencing.
I guess you said with respect to the jurors?
Yeah, you pay the jurors the mileage.
Then that's taxed on the defendant. I guess if that's the case, that surprises me, because the state v. Young Claus or June Claus, however you says pronounce that, says you don't
tax a jury.
Okay. Can't tax jurors. There is a case that says you can potentially do witnesses. The Beaster case. It's pretty old, but it does suggest that witnesses could potentially be taxed.
The mileage for them would be part of that.
Potentially. Yeah, which brings me back to Justice Stacey's question. I have no idea what the cost of prosecution entail. I guess my gut impression is that should only be costs that would pertain to the specific prosecution of that case, and not more general matters such as a portion of the judge's salary or prosecutor's salary or things of that nature. But my answer to your question
is, most of these costs ultimately paid by the county anyway.
Well, it depends. If the defendant does not pay them and they're deemed uncollectible, then the district court has the option of either waiving the costs, or then if it doesn't waive them, they'll be submitted to the county, and the county board will review that, determine if they're going to be paid. So, yes, if they're not paid by the defendant, typically that will go to the county.
So in this case, the defendant is represented by the public defender.
Right. Right. And that's
does
my.
Does that inform us that he's not ever going to pay any of these costs anyway?
That's my understanding here with respect to both of the claims in front of you, both the extradition and just the other separate claim of, did the court err by imposing court costs in general without considering his ability to pay? On both of those claims, when we look at what happened in this case, the court costs were ordered to be deducted from the bond. Well, our record shows that the bond, first of all, was released to the defendant prior to sentencing in this case, and the court's order granting that specifically says costs from this action shall by not be deducted from the bond. So by all appearances, he got the bond back already, and then beyond that, there was no indication that costs should be paid in lump sum or installments. But even if that had happened, he's indigent, and because he is, it's my understanding that he would not be on the hook for any costs at all.
But if the court determined that he had the ability to pay, and then the payments were not made, he would be committed until released all those payments, potentially, he would set those out.
Well, the ability to pay was limited to the bond proceeds, and that had already been returned.
Well, I don't know if there's a specific finding by the court in the record of that? that is that I only find the ability to pay as to the bond proceeds?
Yeah, yeah. The sentencing order says that costs of this prosecution shall be paid or deducted from the bond pursuant to 29-2206 sub 3 to the extent that that bond is not otherwise encumbered by a lien or attorney's fees or whatever.
But if the cost were bigger than even if the bond existed, that would have been all the state could, that's all the state would have been able to recover?
I believe so. I mean, if you're saying that that's the ability to pay and you're deducting it from the bond and it exceeds the bond.
And it'd be also a term that you take it from the bond first and then any remainder is handled in another manner?
Well, I suppose that's possible, but if the court's not ordering that, it kind of comes back to Justice Kelsey's question of where is the authority coming from somebody to impose those fees and to collect on them if the court has only said they're to be deducted from the bond. It seems to me that there would need to be something else in place saying you're going to go beyond the bond to collect those fees. Otherwise, we're just doing it. And I'm not sure where the authority is for that.
If the court ordered that it be deducted from the bond, and at the time the court ordered that there was no bond, what do we do? You seem to be saying in your brief it means that everything just evaporates into the ether and there's no order to pay the cost of the prosecution. And I'm having a hard time following that.
Well, I'm not saying if it just gets swallowed into the ether, but I guess what I'm saying is that by all appearances on the record before us, the defendant won't be paying any of those costs, that it probably will revert back to the county since the defendant's off the hook.
Court orders the defendant pay the costs and says they should be taken out of the proceeds of the bond. That's an interpretation that anything above the bond just doesn't get paid.
Well, I guess as the order reads, I would think that anything above the bond is not getting paid by the defendant if the court hasn't ordered it.
But the court ordered him to pay the cost.
Yeah, to be deducted from the bond, correct. Which had already been determined.
But the record doesn't say what the amount was.
The amount of the bond?
The amount of the costs.
No, we have no indication of costs at all, but cost of prosecution, no amount was ever stated. We have no indication if extradition costs would have been included in that. And if so, what the amount was, how it was calculated, nothing. It just works at a cost of this action and the cost of prosecution. So I
know we've been on this a long time and going back to Mr. Duggan's argument. He said the state paying the judicial admission. What's your response to that? As to the hotel expenses and things other than mileage?
Well, I'm not sure if that would quite rise to the level of the judicial admission. I mean, certainly not a stipulation. There wasn't actual evidence offered. The officer's return is in justice, but it's not in the record before you. But when you look at the comments made at the sentencing hearing, I mean, this, basically what the state said in response to Mr. Duncan's comments was, we don't dispute the amounts set forth, and we'd ask that the court impose all extradition costs against the defendant. That seems, I mean, they're certainly going along with it, so I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but at the same time, it's certainly not. I guess I'm hesitant to say that amounts to a judicial admission when the state is merely going along with the comments and asking that that all costs be imposed, just generally speaking. It's pretty nonspecific. So now, but again, in any event, even if it did amount to a judicial admission, in this case, there just doesn't seem to be any basis for relief for the defendant, given that we don't have a record with any costs, and it doesn't appear that he would be on the hook for any costs, at least not based on my reading of the statutes in the case law before us. If there's something else here beyond what I've read and understand, I believe we'd certainly welcome any clarification from the court, because this does affect a lot of cases. I've been watching pretty much every sentencing order that came in since this, and in every case that the defendant has been indigent, I've seen the exact same paragraph that I saw in this case. So it's happening a lot. And if that's wrong, we would certainly appreciate clarification.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. If you don't mind, So is your suggestion somehow that costs be itemized at the sentencing? Is that even feasible?
Well, I'm not sure that that's my suggestion. I'm not sure if it is feasible, and I'm sure that that would be burdensome for the courts. So I don't know. I'm not really sure how to answer that question in terms of what the appropriate practice should be here. I mean, I think, as I indicated earlier, if you're going to impose costs of prosecution and it's going to be something more than the bond, I would think that you need to specify that so that we know how it's going to be paid and when. But if it's just routine run-of-the-mill costs being deducted from the bond, I haven't seen anything which indicates that the court has to make specific findings with respect to the amount, let alone that it needs to itemize what those costs are. So I'm not sure what's right, but in terms of what's required, I haven't seen anything that requires that, especially with respect to the itemization or what it would be. Frankly, I'm not sure because our statutes don't lay that out, not that I've found. There are no further questions. We'd ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court, or in the event something else is happening, that appropriate clarification be made.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Very good. It is now 10:19. We have 6 cases today. The court is going to take a short break before we go to the next case, which is Hauptmann O'Brien versus Auto Owners Insurance Company. Court will reconvene at 10:30. Thank you very much.